I like to dabble in home repairs. It's not that I have a training in carpentry or that you may even consider me handy. I just like to work with my hands. I might also, in fact, enjoy a weekend run to a hardware store. Walking through aisle after aisle of tools can be therapeutic after a week of sitting in desks and in meetings. But when a problem comes up, I set about determining what seems like an intuitive fix and creatively plan for how to go about finding a solution. Sometimes this involves reviewing best practices on YouTube or online forums. But more times than not, I think through the problem and try to creatively approach a solution. I have a friend, though, who remodels and fixes houses for a living. I've been on jobs with him in the past. The experience is like watching an episode of an HGTV series as a simple cement basement becomes a home theater, or a dated kitchen transforms into a cook's paradise. But where his knowledge and mine contains the widest delta is in the details. Where I might see just a screw, he sees a specific type of screw and knows when you should or should not use it. He knows why a wood screw shouldn't be used in drywall or how to properly prepare and sand down a wall before painting. So occasionally I'll call and explain what I need to do and how I plan to fix it. And quite often he points out a better and faster way of doing so. He might also ask pointed questions about aspects of the work. He might find areas I simply glossed over while thinking a fix must be easy, for example. But he knows why my quick fix is actually going to take three times as long to finish, or why I shouldn't just cut a hole in a wall without checking to see if the wall is load-bearing first. And once he explains these points, it becomes clear that I need to be more mindful of what isn't so obvious and intuitive, as that is often where the real problems lie. There are two ways we could continue this podcast. The first is to look at the idea of what makes someone an expert. We could talk about how it takes 10,000 hours of practice to become an expert in any field and share a few examples of expertise in the workplace. But instead, I want to expose a critical layer of my thinking when it comes to this situation and many, many others. I want to ask a simple question, one which might spare you a great deal of time, money, and grief. One in the critical area of customer experience. Why did I jump to a conclusion before knowing the full picture? I'm Robert Murphy, and as you're about to learn, it's a little more complex than it might sound.
This is Connection, a podcast that brings you stories and expert opinions from the front lines of the workplace, enabling listeners to reimagine the worlds of employee and customer engagement.
So, why do we jump to a conclusion before knowing the full picture? To answer that, we'll have insights from independent analyst John Arnold. But first, we'll need to talk about dishwashing liquid. No, this is not an advertisement, I promise. It's part of the story. For those who lived through the 80s, the sight of a lemon on a bottle of Sunlight dish detergent was a familiar sight. Detergents were often positioned and scented with bright citrus fruits, often as they are today. But for those in the Washington, D.C. and Maryland area in 1982, Sunlight had a different connotation. The makers of Sunlight sent more than 50 million samples to homes across the region. The samples featured the product name, the phrase real lemon juice, a picture of 1.5 lemons, and, of course, the words dishwashing detergent. As the story goes, the CDC began receiving calls reporting that people were getting sick from the product. Why, you might ask? Around 1,000 people read the words real lemon juice, popped the top to discover a pleasing lemon scent, and immediately poured it over their evening meal, thinking it was a food product. As one said, "After work, hurrying to prepare dinner, I grabbed the sample bottle that had been left by the front door. I quickly read the label and proceeded to pour, quote-unquote, real lemon juice all over my 24 pieces of chicken. I had to waste my dinner. My family wound up eating eggs and toast. Needless to say, I will never buy this product." Now, before you ask how someone or even 1,000 people could do this, let's be clear. The part of the bottle that catches your eye is the lemons, the phrase real lemon juice, and the Sunlight logo in the middle. There isn't a dirty or clean dish on the label. I mean, in a related ad, a hand is actually squeezing a lemon into the bottle. Yes, it also says it would be harmful if swallowed, but if you're part of a busy family moving fast to get dinner on the table, it's not unrealistic to make a quick judgment of the bottle and believe it's just a bottled lemon juice product. The truth is, I make judgments and assumptions all day long, as you do too. Our minds are taking in a tremendous amount of information all the time and automatically filtering out some information as unnecessary. We then collate the data we just collected and form an assumption about what it is we are seeing. Only sometimes we miss really critical data. There is a scientific term related to this principle, inference observation confusion. This is a communication obstacle where one judges or decides something without having all the facts to reach unwarranted conclusions. We might say this differently as jumping to conclusions. You might be thinking, yes, I get the idea, but why does it matter? What if the critical decisions we make in the workplace are simply assumptions? What if the significant gains in performance and revenue were held back by overlooked aspects of business operations? What if we are, in a way, missing the label? When the topic of poor CX comes up, it is often seen as a function of agent behavior or long phone trees. That can absolutely play a part. But the story isn't always what it seems. The root has to do with technology. It is equally important to understand how agents interact with coworkers as it is with customers. To better understand an example of this in a critical area of operations, I sat down with John Arnold from J. Arnold & Associates. He helps businesses understand the strategic value of the technology at the core of all business interactions, communications. I began by asking about his origin story.
I am an independent analyst. My roots to that go to Frost and Sullivan, where I got my start as an analyst in technology. So my job was to track infrastructure that allowed carrier networks to support VoIP. And these would be things like media gateways, media servers, eventually SBCs came into the picture. So in that period of time, I went from being a specialist in VoIP to adding the other pieces, which we now call UC and collaboration. So that space is a kind of an outgrowth of VoIP because basically the telephony vendors were the ones who drove the evolution of VoIP, and as telephony kind of has, its role has changed, they need a successor product to the PBX. And that's kind of what gave rise to UC evolving. And now, you know, as you see, Robert, you know, UC is the sum of many parts. And as an analyst, you know, our job is to stay on top of the trends. So we follow a broad range of things. Anybody who's covering collaboration in this way now is looking at voice, video, text, conferencing. And now it's obviously there's these concentric circles where you have to layer in mobility. Now we're getting with cloud, of course, you're getting into these hosted services, and that opens up the door to not just new technologies, but also a whole new range of new players. And now we start layering in AI to all of this. Now with contact centers using the same kind of tools and this broader focus of businesses trying to become more customer centric, you know, the blending of UC and contact center has become almost de rigueur. And RingCentral is certainly one of those players who have, you know, blended these offerings into a more kind of complete package. And it's kind of the way things are going. And it's all driven from the cloud, of course. But it makes this stuff really, really interesting.
That prompted me to ask John, what is the connection then between UC and CX? I invited him to dig deeper with details about his experience, about the transition of UC and collaboration to this world of contact centers now tied in with them.
Yeah, you know, Robert, it's a really important bridge, and it's another one of the major kind of implications of cloud. When we talk about comms and teamwork, and, you know, I hate to overuse that term collaboration, but that's kind of the default for all of this. You know, when you get stuff done in the workplace, you know, enterprises and SMBs face all these challenges about how do we keep people working when they're bringing their mobile phones into the office? How do we keep people productive when they're working remotely? You know, the workplace environment, as I said, where and when work gets done is really becoming very fluid. And legacy tools that we're so used to using just aren't up for the task, mainly because we've used them all in standalone fashion. Well, now there are other ways to do contact center. And increasingly, many of those players who can bring contact center are already doing hosted UC. And so when you say, okay, I can do a UC offering, I can do a contact center offering, and some of them, of course, have a CPaaS offering. When you have all these pieces that can work very well as standalone businesses, you start to do the math a little and put it together and say, hey, you know what? A lot of times, as we'll get to this in the research in a few minutes, Robert, a lot of times contact center agents can't get all the answers a customer may need on the spot. What they need is somewhere in the enterprise, not in the contact center. So when you can put those two pieces together and make enterprise-based workers equally accessible to agents as their peers in the contact center, now they can draw from anywhere across the organization. That's the idea that a company wants to project this image of when a customer is calling, you only have to call one person, but they get the whole company behind them. That's the idea. Rather than me as an unhappy customer say, I have to call the invoice department to settle a billing issue. I have to call the subscription department to do my renewal. I have to talk to maybe a tech support person because I'm having an issue, you know, recharging my phone. And rather than talking to five different people to solve your problems, you really should only have to talk to one person, regardless of what the problem is. So that's the concept behind omnichannel, right? Where an agent can talk to you, regardless of the channel you're using, and still be able to get you all the answers you need during that call. And that's where this blending of UC and contact center becomes really powerful, because now they're not on separate islands, right? They can very quickly use a back channel, and this is where AI comes in as well, to say, okay, I need someone who has expertise on this product line. And you can get that information almost in real time, and before you know it, you can bring one of the experts into this call, solve a problem on the spot, and you look like a hero to your customer, because it seemed like an impossible task to do. Certainly with legacy technology, it was. But now with these technologies, cloud-based, AI-driven, blending UC and contact center, all of a sudden, now it's a very seamless environment. Boy, the agent has a much better chance of doing a really good job. And that has so many ripple effects.
John affirmed that we seem to be in a revolution in customer experience, where increased customer expectations meets the opportunity to solve these customer problems and requests in the most seamless, satisfying way. So I asked him, now that the bar is set really high, how would he go about defining what actually is a bad customer experience?
And I think that's kind of the key point, that the bar has raised. One of the biggest holdbacks to customer service is this idea that because service levels have been historically so poor, the bar is so low. I mean, it's almost like you have nowhere to go but up, right? And now, as I've mentioned often enough already, but cloud is still a big part of the story, because with the cloud, not only do you have more choice of technologies to use, but cloud has been a big driver of globalization, and certainly for services. And what that means is that today's customers have more choice than they ever had before. And not only can they get it cheaper, but they can probably get it faster. So it really erodes loyalty to a company, and it gives a lot more leverage to the customers. Whereas in the past, we would tolerate certain, you know, incompetencies from service because you didn't have much choice to go elsewhere, and B, your expectations weren't that high in the first place. But we've become so conditioned in our kind of digital economy of everything we get is instantaneous, everything we get is on our terms. And now we expect that as a customer, regardless of the product we're buying. And that's a real, you know, a couple of orders of magnitude leap of raising the bar for a lot of companies that historically haven't had to provide exceptional service because they didn't need to. And because the effort to buy a product is so low with e-commerce and, you know, Amazon shipping and all this stuff, if you don't get what you want right away, you know, not only do you have more choice, but you have options to get it faster and cheaper if that's what's really important to you. So those fundamental dynamics of what constitutes good service are really changing in a big way. So the big one, of course, is get my problem solved correctly and get my problem solved on the spot. And that means, you know, this, you know, first call resolution thing, but also just getting it all done in one session, right? You may only end up talking to one agent, but that agent may have to interact with a half a dozen other people behind the scenes to give you that, you know, front of the door experience that, that ends really, really well. You don't have to know that that agent is getting all this help. You just know that it comes out really well in the end. But a big part of that experience, of course, is what, you know, we talk about is the customer journey. And that's how does customer support work with that customer? And it doesn't mean that it's just because they have a problem with your product. They may be calling you for all kinds of different reasons. And this is where we get into that bigger picture of saying, well, yes, I may need technical support, but I may also just be calling into, I need to update my credit card with your file. May mean that I want to understand about when the next product release is coming. There's a million reasons to engage, but every touch point is, you know, what we call a moment of truth, where the agent has an opportunity to respond in a way that makes that customer feel better about you. So a bad customer experience may be something where the product itself isn't problematic. It's the engagement with that agent that sours you on wanting to do business with that company. So now it becomes a much bigger issue, right? Maybe that your billing policies or return policies are inflexible. It may be that you aren't paying enough attention to what their real needs are, and you're not really attuned to what's making them happy or unhappy, just how you're treating them. And then, of course, the customer holds all these other cards, because if they're not getting a good experience, and we'll get to this impact of bad CX in a minute, if they have that bad experience, they have all the tools in the world to share that with the world, right? They don't go to social media to talk about their great customer experiences, although some do. But when there's a bad experience, they won't hesitate, right? And so that's where any mistake you make, whether it's intentional or not, so to speak, it potentially can be amplified many times over.
A visual representation of what John described can be seen as a graph. One axis would be the quality of the experience, or how easily the agent was able to satisfy the requirements of the customer. The other axis is the impact of the experience. So we're looking at the quality and we're looking at the impact. I asked him, what then is the real cost of bad customer experience?
Yeah, well, it's good that you're asking. It comes back to the survey that we've been looking at together that RingCentral commissioned earlier in the year, and it was conducted by Site Research, and they've been a partner, I think, with Ring for a while. And this particular survey that they did was 2,000 respondents, and it's basically looking at quantifying some of this, these dynamics we're talking about, for two things. We call them EX and CX. So CX is what we're looking at here, customer experience, and also EX, which is employee experience. And the research was done to kind of draw a connection between when employees have the tools they need to do a job really well, they'll perform better, and they will ultimately deliver a better customer experience. Now, businesses didn't always connect the dots this way. As I said, contact center was kind of in its own little world, mostly just answering problems as they came in. So the cost of bad CX. So a couple of ways to look at that. Certainly a cost shows up with customers who aren't happy. So you have kind of, again, their willingness to do business with you. There's also the hard cost of lost revenue when customers stop buying from you or buy less from you. And then ultimately, there's a cost that comes with your employees, primarily agents, who, when they can't do a good job because they don't have the right tools, yes, the customer is unhappy, but so are they, because now they can't do their job well. And if they're expected to perform at a certain level and can't do it, obviously that's going to lead to, you know, drop in morale and higher turnover, et cetera, et cetera. So I want to share a few data points from that research, Robert, to kind of speak to some of this when you talk about what's the cost. So 41% of respondents, okay, have said that they've stopped using, these are customers, okay, that have stopped using a product or service because they needed to repeat themselves over and over again. And I mentioned earlier that example of, you know, the last thing you want to do is have a customer have to talk to two or three agents. So 41% stop using your product for that reason. You can just imagine the impact that could have on revenues. And even just, you know, all the referral things that come from that of getting other people to use your product. Along the same lines, it's the same number, 41% stop using products after being passed from agent to agent. Even for those who don't stop using you, there's an even higher number, it says 88%, really dislike it when they have to keep repeating themselves over and over. So that's really important because 41% say they stop using your products, but a much higher number, 88%, say they don't like it, they hate it. So this tells you, this is sowing the seeds for future losses. And so, you know, what often happens, you know, in the customer service game, what you often find is that when customers leave you, they don't say goodbye. The problem is when most customers leave, they've reached a point, maybe 1,000 cuts kind of thing, but it's from these kind of experiences that may not initially cause them to leave you. So you don't think twice about it, but it builds up. So, you know, on the other hand, when you talk about unhappy employees, another interesting data point is that 75% of workers agree that when it's hard to collaborate with their coworkers, they can't serve customers very, very well. So again, it's this idea I was saying earlier, if I don't have the right tools, I can't do a good job. So this is quantifying it, 75%. So when you talk about what's the cost for CX not being good with unhappy employees, 75% is a pretty high number. And that should be a wake-up call to say, this isn't just, you know, maybe a few nerdy, techie, savvy employees who really expect a lot. It's 75% is 3 out of 4 workers. That's a lot. Similarly, 54% of workers say when you don't have the right tools, they're less productive. So when you start looking at that, this isn't like 1 out of 4. This is at least half of everybody. It's kind of a critical mass number. So this is not a small problem. And I think we know it's only going to get worse simply because technology is changing so quickly and our expectations are also changing so quickly about what we want when we're customers trying to get help from a company. So I think there's a pretty direct connection there between poor performance impacting customers' interest in doing business with you and how this also triggers unhappy coworkers because they know what they need to do, but they don't have the tools to do it.
John's examples created a stark picture of unhappy customers, lost revenue, and in turn, unhappy employees. That begged the question, what is the cause of bad customer experience?
So the easy answer, of course, is that I mentioned earlier, customer expectations sometimes can be unrealistically high, just because of their experiences day to day with how they communicate and use the internet, et cetera, et cetera. So they may expect these like instant levels of service or perfect outcomes every time. And that's just not going to happen. So the bar might be unrealistically high in some situations. So that's not necessarily a shortcoming of what the company is able to do with its contact center. What's more likely the case is that the agents and the broader customer center environment, contact center environment itself has limitations for supporting customers. The root of that is often in the technologies being used, which tend to be legacy systems that are, first of all, premise-based. And secondly, they are using older technologies that don't integrate very well with other pieces. And they tend to be built around a more traditional model where most interaction was done by phone. Whereas today, I mentioned earlier, we need omni-channel capabilities so we could use the channels the customers use. So even if the agents are really well-trained and well-intentioned, they're often hamstrung by the tools available to them. So that's a really big fundamental issue. And most contact centers know that. Problem is, they can't get the CapEx budgets they need to upgrade and get the proper investment done for the modernization of these tools because premise-based technologies are so expensive and it takes a long time to change over. It's a lot of sunk costs. So there's a resistance to change, basically, to put these updates in place, which would go a long way to solving that. But then there's, of course, this newer generation of the cloud-based contact center capabilities. And that's a good way to leapfrog this gap of technology without needing the CapEx. And that's kind of what's happening now, is this alternative approach has come into play. And that goes a long way to providing the kind of tools that they're going to need to overcome this problem. And related to that, though, it's also fair to say another cause of bad customer service is simply that the agents are either not trained well enough to, A, provide the professional level of service that customers are expecting now, but also they're not necessarily trained enough to use all of these new channels effectively. Because any agent who's been around a long time is certainly very good using the phone, but they're not all going to be natively capable. So there is a bit of a skills gap here that we're seeing now. And it's becoming even broader when you start using AI-based tools. The chatbots start to become part of the experience. Agents have to know how to respond to these triggers as well. So what's happening is that a lot of metrics in the contact center that are used, they call them KPIs, right? Key performance indicators, to monitor the effectiveness and performance of a contact center, they tend to be very operational and agent-focused, right? First call resolution, average hold time, these kind of metrics, which they can track very effectively, but they're only as good as the performance levels expected of the agent. What they don't reflect is customer experience. And so what's happening is when supervisors and decision makers who are running contact centers become so obsessed with metrics about operational performance, that's all they really care about. They may not realize that those metrics are driving behaviors from agents that may not necessarily lead to good outcomes for customers. So the new model that's emerging is more of this CX-centered approach, this customer-centric approach, where what you really need to do is work backwards from what delivers a great customer experience. The metrics you really want are those good outcomes of a customer engagement. If that means the average hold time changes a bit, if that means agents are handling fewer calls per hour, so be it. If the net result is customers who are happier, they don't leave you as often, they end up spending more money with you, that's what you want, then that's a different model of evaluating, you know, the ROI of a contact center in the organization. And that's a whole different way of thinking about the role of contact center, the value of CX. So when we talk about what's the cause of bad service, a lot of it is kind of almost systemic. It's coming from within, but those causes would be remedied if an organization took a different approach, right, to what a contact center is supposed to be about in this day and age. That's a big shift.
By this point, John and I had talked about the impact of bad customer experience and the cause of bad experience, and how there needs to be a new way of thinking and approaching customer experience and employee experience. I asked his high-level thoughts on what businesses can do today to help solve this problem.
You know, a big part of this is how you look at, as I mentioned earlier, the role of the contact center. What is it supposed to be? As we know, traditionally, it's been viewed as a cost center, right? And that just means, you know, processing as many calls as possible, et cetera, et cetera. The different thinking here is about, again, working backwards from the outside in to what does it take to deliver great CX? And we figure out what that is going to entail internally. So I mentioned earlier, for example, digital transformation. That's a kind of a much bigger umbrella that touches everything in the organization. So digital transformation tends to focus on customer experience, which is great. But what we're not seeing so much of, and this was shown in the research, is that the experience of the employee is really not viewed as the same in the same way. In other words, when you want to become customer centric, you need digital transformation. It's got to be about CX. But connecting the dots back to what creates a good CX, it's employee engagement is a big part of that, but it hasn't been thought of in the same way. So when you have a digital transformation project, there'll be a lot of talk about that CX outcome that you're after, but not so much about the employee engagement. And that's kind of one of the things that came out of this research, is that they're not generally being seen in the same light. Whereas RingCentral and others are doing this in the sense that you're offering this integration of contact center and UC. It's kind of this like better together idea, right? When you have those two pieces connected, you get that seamless access to everybody across the organization. That ultimately gives the agents a much better chance of solving the customer's problem than just being kind of on their own to figure it out. So that employee engagement piece is really important, because you need to know in your organization, you've got to make sure that everyone in the company thinks that CX is important. If you're sitting at a desk, if you're in the enterprise side of things, because you don't deal with customers firsthand every day, you may not think that you're part of CX, but in fact you are, because you will often be the kind of the gatekeeper of information that somewhere, sometime, an agent's going to need to do a good job. And connecting those pieces can only happen if you're taking this kind of holistic view of saying, my approach to CX has got to include EX as well. So again, to cite some findings from the research, 89% of the respondents believe that when you have broken workflows that come from not having the right tools, you get lower job satisfaction. And when those employees aren't really happy in their work, that will ultimately impact customer satisfaction, because they're not able to be part of the solution, and that's needed. And when you can't solve customer problems, as we talked about earlier, customers will stop doing business with you. So it does affect your bottom line. So the good news is that there is interest in doing this. So again, coming back to the research, 90% of the respondents, they feel that what we call, in the what the research is calling, disjointed communications. And we see that from companies that aren't really using UC very well. 90% feel that this negatively impacts employees. So it hurts job satisfaction. Along the same lines, it also impacts, 88% said it negatively impacts workflows. So again, if you can't work efficiently, you're going to have a hard time ultimately keeping the customer happy. So when you're giving respondents in the survey an alternative and saying, hey, if you could do all of this and put all these pieces together, what do you think would happen? 92% said having this integrated approach would improve both the employee experience and the customer experience. 92% also said it becomes easier to keep customer happy and will increase their satisfaction score. So I think when presented the alternative, pretty obvious, or certainly clear from the data, that there's kind of a light goes off, says, yeah, that's the solution. I think that would tie a lot of these pieces together. So again, when we talk about these customer expectations, the survey showed 95% of customers want friendly and knowledgeable agents. 94% don't want to have to repeat information. So when you look at those kind of really strong numbers, it's clear that the things that are happening, as we talked about earlier, are not what the customer wants. When you get almost everybody saying that, if I'm not getting friendly agents, and they're friendly because they're happy in their jobs, if they're not, I'm not going to be friendly. And if almost everybody says, I don't want to repeat myself over and over, but yet if that's what's happening, we see the cost of what comes from that 41% stop doing business with you. You know, when you start putting those numbers together, it's pretty clear you cannot continue the status quo. The other thing that I think is really valuable from this research is that's just where we're at today. I mentioned earlier, AI is coming. Well, these collaboration capabilities keep evolving, right? And there's a strong element of interest from the research that having even a few of the tools that are coming is going to be even better. So for example, The research focused on two things in particular: team messaging, which is what we use in RingCentral with Blip, for example. 94% said they would love to use team messaging with customers. Now, I don't know what percentage of contact centers are actually using team messaging as part of the mix, but I suspect it's pretty low. Not only that, but 83% said they want to use it with their coworkers inside the organization, so not just with customers, but through their coworkers. Similarly with video, 87% said they would love to use video with their customers. 88% said they'd love to use video with their coworkers. most contact centers aren't really using these tools very much right now. Clearly, there's an appetite to use them. So as the understanding of what collaboration can do starts to grow, the value of it as a solution gets even higher. And just lastly, I mentioned AI. For example, 86%, this is like a wish list for, you know, what's coming, say that they would want to use AI because it will help serve up the right resources for customers. 86% said it will find the right data about the customers. So speed is the name of the game in doing a good job with service, speed and accuracy. It's very clear that AI has a role to play in helping quickly find the information. You may not have to talk to someone. You may just need to reference maybe a technical document, or you may have to just reference a specific customer invoice from 3 years ago. While the agent can do that in real time with AI and get those results right away, clearly there's a strong interest here from this research to say, yeah, I could use those capabilities. But it's iterative. It keeps evolving. Unlike premise-based technologies, which tend to be static, right, and just do one thing really, really well, we have to get past that model because clearly customer expectations are have moved way beyond that. So I think there's a real strong, I think, call to action here to look at that rationale for EX and CX as being a kind of a better together piece. And that's exactly what this research is pointing to.
Connection is an original podcast from RingCentral and is available through iTunes or the podcast channel of your choice.